Good afternoon, everyone. This is Accessibility for All, Practical Tips for Creating Access in Archives, SAA's second forum and discussion and call to action on this issue. I'm Daria D'Arienzo, forum chair. On behalf of my co-coordinator, Deborah Kimmock, and all the members of the Archives Management Roundtable, Records Management Roundtable, Joint Working Group on Accessibility in Archives and Records Management, our official title, welcome. Accessibility 2 takes a practical approach to work to addressing issues faced by archivists when creating accessible workplaces and research centers for all colleagues and patrons. It is the direct follow-up of discussion at the first forum in D.C. last year, including the challenge from Mark Green in his thought-provoking remarks about the archival profession's sluggishness in addressing accessibility and disability issues. The impetus for both forums comes from the group's ongoing work, including surveys, research and exploration of what creating archival accessibility really means, and the evolution and development of SAA's best practices for working with archives employees and researchers. For more information and access to all resources we've created, visit the working group's table in the registration area, coordinated by Michelle Gantz. Come to our office hours tonight during the vendor expo, and take a look at our website, kept current by webmaster Lisa Snyder over there. The website address is on all your forum handouts, and all of today's presentations provide practical approaches and tools which together create a concrete framework for taking first steps in addressing accessibility issues, the topic most frequently requested of us by colleagues. I'll start with some contextual remarks and pose a series of questions that constitute a look at your archives exercise to creatively see accessibly. After that, we'll move to three concurrent 30-minute breakout sessions that build on themes from the look list. Deborah Kimmock, raise her hand, please, Special Collections Librarian at SUNY Plattsburgh, will share techniques for making conference presentations available. Michelle Pacifico, Archives Facilities Consultant, will give practical advice for providing physical accessibility in your archives. And Lisa Snyder, Web Developer, will provide her tips for web and document accessibility. At the end, we'll reconvene briefly for a final wrap-up. Shirley Waking is here to interpret. The session is also being recorded. That recording, as well as the content of our remarks and all handouts, will be available online following the conference. Respect and cooperation form the basis of all professional relationships with colleagues and users. SAA's Code of Ethics and Core Values of Archivists statement remind us that part of our responsibility is to seek to build connections to underdocumented communities. The importance of this cannot be stressed. The focus of the Accessibility Working Group has been to show that accommodation and access are not disability issues, they are human issues. And that addressing them in meaningful ways in your archive spaces, services, and programs benefits everyone. Essentially, we are working to change the perspective from which we see this historically neglected area. Our goal is to get a critical mass of people to care enough about accessibility to take concrete actions so that all current and future colleagues feel included, respected, valued, and considered fully capable participating members of our profession, and that all patrons feel welcomed and served in our archives. This is more than just saying, I know and adhere to the Americans with Disabilities Act. This is about attitude. External forces and historical societal perspectives impact, often subconsciously, perceptions of disability. Even the word is negative. Clayton Copeland in a March 2001 article points out that the contributions of a person that a person makes to society are not limited by his or her physical or other challenges, but by the limitations society places on that person. Disability then becomes a reality determined by society itself. She continues, a person actually is disabled by the limits society imposes upon differently abled populations via inaccessibility. She concludes that current studies show that the idea of disability is a societal construct, and as such, disability is a challenge or a culmination of challenges that does not exist until societal forces, i.e. accessibility and discrimination, which stem from attitudes about differences, create these. Thus, if attitudes are constructed, they can be deconstructed, and things can change. We must, as a profession, use all our archival skills to transform our own house. We are a caring, intelligent, creative, and visionary profession, and we can do this. So sometimes it's easier to understand the real importance of the work we do and the need to do it with greater clarity when we are outside our usual venues. This happened to me just recently. I was standing in the middle of the lemon-yellow kitchen in my sister's flat in Edinburgh, Scotland, unpacking boxes. BBC Radio 4 was playing. A woman was talking. She had identified herself as a rather risque and controversial writer and performance artist. She was speaking eloquently and passionately about the need and the rights of all individuals to tell their stories in their own voices. And, she went on, for those stories to become part of our collective story. She was ardent about using one's own voice and red-hot angry about the labels put on individuals who were, for whatever reason, categorized as different and thus segregated, marginalized, and made to feel like they have to apologize for just being who they are. She was furious because she felt that society had tried to discredit her and to define her as not capable, and it had allowed someone else, the other, to tell her story through their eyes and with their voice. She said she spoke up loud and clear and definitely outside the typical social constructs because she believed and behaved like she had choice and she had voice, and she was determined to define herself as herself. I thought, how courageous, and how important it was for archivists to facilitate the courage to speak the story of one's life, and then to use all our skills to save and share those stories. Before I knew it, the interview was over. Only then did I learn that while she defined herself first as a woman, a poet, and a performance artist, others had assigned to her the label disabled. She uses a wheelchair and had for most of her life. She said this is integral to the person she is. It is part of her story and her work, and she embraced that. Others saw it as making her less. She said, no, my life is about what I can do, about my ability, and I tell that story. So every day, she proved that other wrong. SAA must take to heart its own commitment to fostering a diverse and inclusive workforce and to supporting accessible archives. Challenges abound, but so do new possibilities. By actively recruiting good archivists of all abilities, creating environments that support the work and research of all, and improving access to archival materials, we serve everyone. Getting our own house in order so we can act on what we believe is one way. Actions do speak louder than words. We can start by seeing accessibly and using the following top 20 look list as a review tool for taking stock and then making small steps to improve accessibility in our archives. Any list like this must be a cooperative effort. So thanks to my working group and forum colleagues past and present, and especially to Deborah and Lisa and the two Michelles and Mark Green and Sarah White for helping me think more creatively. Okay, now the list. Remember, this list is on your handout, and together with all the handouts, this is going to be on the website. You have the text of all of these remarks in front of you. So this top 20 look list is a continuation of the working group's goal to provide current and practical information on accessibility issues and archives. We were working from the requirements dictated by the Americans with Disabilities Act, our best practices statements, and our current research. So this summarizes some of the steps archivists can take to improve accessibility for staff and patrons. So, one, have you read the following recently? The SAA Code of Ethics, the SAA's Core Values Statement for Archivists, the Best Practices for Working with Archives Employees with Physical Disabilities, the Best Practices for Working with Archives Researchers with Physical Disabilities. Revisit these statements of respect and cooperation that inform our roles as archivists. As we've said before, accessibility and access and what lies behind true accessibility and access are at heart human issues. Look at your public entry. Is it well marked with a high contrast and large simple sign? Is it well lit? Is it sheltered? Where's the parking? Is the path to the entrance clear of obstacles, clear of curbs, clear of grates? Is there an appropriately graded ramp or gently sloping path with landings for resting at suitable interviews? Are there railings? Is there an automatic or power-assisted front door? And is it wide enough for wheelchairs or scooters? That's 36 or 42 to 42 inches. So designating an accessible parking space with appropriate curb cuts very close to the entrance takes few resources, and the law is on your side. Adding a railing may take more money, but it is useful for to patrons. Three, look at the access for patrons and employees to your public spaces. Are the directions clearly marked? Is there an elevator? Is it ADA compliant? Is the door lock within seated reach? Are there braille markings on the controls and the information panel? Is there an emergency phone? Have all tripping hazards been removed? Are all security checkpoints and procedures designed to be accessible? Is there an accessible coat room with lockers? Is an accessible restroom available? Four, check your doors. Are they heavy and difficult to open? Is there a glass window in the entrance a door? And are all glass doors marked so no one will walk into them? Is there an entry phone? Has the door closure been adjusted to provide appropriate delay? This can certainly be done without any cost. Do the doors open with levers or pull handles with an easy-to-grip shape? These turning knobs can be changed for a modest cost, and that also aids staff who might have their hands full when transporting archival materials. Five, look at your floors. Is the surface slippery? Are there loose mats or carpets? Are all carpets firm and flat? Is there contrasting colors between the walls and the floors? Are there dangling wires or other possible wire hazards? Unstable flooring is dangerous for everyone, but especially for anyone with mobility issues. You can secure and eliminate anything that moves or that can create a tripping hazard. Six, look at the layout of your furniture in your research room. Are the public spaces negotiable for wheelchairs? Are the aisles wide enough? Are there clear sight lines for those seated or standing? Can you see who comes in? Can they see you? Is the room free of obstacles and clutter? Does your service desk allow for staff to talk with someone in a wheelchair at the same eye level? Is there a separate well-lit area away from the desk for staff and patrons to talk at the same eye level? Are there non-tilting chairs with sturdy arms and good support available for patrons with assistive and mobility aids like walkers and crutches, and for other people to sit Is there at least one of your public areas' work tables that is wheelchair height? The ADA provides the specific requirements, and you can add height by using coasters or casters for a very low-cost solution. Six, continued here. Are the public spaces negotiable for wheelchairs? Oops. I'm so sorry. Are the tables and chairs adjustable, and do they have casters appropriate to the flooring? Can everyone reach materials on bookshelves, magazines, and brochures, and displays and handouts? Displays should be about 48 inches off the floor. Are there extra outlets for additional assistive technology equipment? And do you have a designated quiet area for those who need to concentrate? Simply making sure furniture in staff and public spaces does not create physical barriers for anyone costs nothing but forethought. Seven, look at your exhibition areas. Are your exhibits negotiable for those in wheelchairs? Can everyone view the exhibitions? Do you have a braille or an audio option for visitors? Have you used accessible fonts, colors, and contrast for your labels? Are your item labels at a height and large enough that anyone can read them easily? Eight, look at your work and storage spaces. Are the aisles wide enough for a wheelchair to navigate? Are the aisles clear of obstacles? Are things hanging off shelves? Are there power cords across the aisles or any dangling wires? Is it an obstacle course to navigate staff spaces? All items should fit on the shelves. You can organize and rebox as needed. Nothing should overhang, impeding access or blocking emergency routes for anyone with limited mobility. And these wide aisles can be useful for loaded archives carts and book trucks, too. Nine, look at your conference and meeting rooms and your presentation options. Is the room large enough to navigate in a wheelchair? Does the conference table accommodate a wheelchair? Is the meeting room well lit and quiet? Is a microphone available if needed? Are on-screen presentations simple and clear? Do those presentations use large print and high contrast colors? And are on-screen presentations available in alternative ways, large print, audio, braille? And do these sometimes include a copy of the oral presentation that accompanies the slideshow, thus your handout, so you can have that in paper? Many of the same questions posed for research rooms can also be asked of your conference and meeting rooms. Halfway, 10. Consider the ergonomic issues for all staff and patrons. Have workstations been modified to meet employees' needs? Can they be modified to include adaptive equipment and furniture if that's needed? What about desks, chairs, lighting, and appropriate computer assists? Can electrical outlets and light switches be reached from both seating and standing? Sometimes a simple change in placement of a keyboard can help. Or specialized software, large monitors, and oversized keyboards are also other options. 11. Have you tested your sound, fire, security, and alarm systems with the needs of differently abled staff and researchers in mind? Do you have visible and audible fire alarms? Could someone in a wheelchair reach to activate an alarm if necessary? Does your emergency and evacuation plan provide provision for staff and patrons who are differently abled? Is there a designated meeting place for people to gather outside during an emergency? Have you trained employees to assist patrons and colleagues in case of emergency? Have you invited the fire department, police department, or institutional safety department to visit and advise? Consulting with public safety experts costs nothing and gains much. Number 12, look at your informational signs. Are they simple and clear? Do you include universally recognized icons? Do you have clear, appropriately coded floor plans? Have you used accessible fonts, color, and contrast in your signs? And are they at a height and a size that most people can read them? Do you have any audio options? Do you have Braille options? If you can't read the signs easily, neither can others. In an aging population, think of life without reading glasses. It costs virtually nothing to create signs and labels using a larger font or to create an accessible handout. And audio options can also be possible. Recently, we did something where we made an iPhone app for people, which gave them the ability to actually listen and go around. So, number 13, use your public access computers with only one hand and with one eye covered. Can you maneuver the controls? Can you really see what's on the screen? Do you have the easy option of an enlarged text feature? Have you installed free open source screen readers for those who need them? Do you have screen adapters, adaptive keyboards, keyboard overlays, or voice input available? Or is a basic trackball or touchpad or touchscreen available? Can you easily sit at the computer if you use a wheelchair? And most importantly, is there a person always nearby and available to help? 14, look at your website. Is it simple, easy to navigate, clear and direct? Can you search it? Is the font large enough, or can an individual easily change it if necessary? Have you used adequate contrast between the text and the background? Are alternative formats available? Is it free of the distracting and problematic bells and whistles that make it difficult for people with all abilities to at least make first contact with your archives? Do you have information about resources and services for special users clearly articulated and linked online? This can be as simple as offering the option of talking to or directly emailing a staff member, should a researcher choose to do that, and providing a name, phone number, and a personal email address. Number 15, look at your informational documents and other printed materials. Is the font clear and large enough? Is there enough white space? Have you used adequate contrast between the text and the background? Are the sentences short and clear? Are there visuals that can help? And are there oral or Braille options? Number 16, listen to your archive's voice message. Is it spoken slowly and clearly? Are there options or specific instructions for those who may need additional support in physically or virtually accessing your archives? Do you provide a name together with a phone number and an email address to make it easy to reach an actual person? 17. Are basic accessibility tools at hand for staff and researchers? Can you create an accessibility toolbox? At my little public library, we call it Sadie's Bag, named after the late library cat. Consider magnifiers of various sorts, including an illuminated magnifier, a selection of reading glasses, book props, a page turner, pencils with large grips, a small handheld recorder and player, some extra flash drives, and an extra task light or two. These things are modest in cost and are really useful tools. Number 18, have you discovered the principles of universal design? These guidelines are a collaborative effort of architects, product engineers, and environmental designers and engineers. The 7 universal design principles are a framework for the design of products and environments usable for all people to the greatest extent possible without the need for adaptation or specialized design. These 7 principles are equitable use, flexibility in use, simple and intuitive use, perceptible information, tolerance for error, low physical effort, and adequate size and space for approach and use. Applying these can inform new spaces and help redesign and improve old ones. We also have this information on our website. We addressed this in great detail last year, this universal design thing. And Michelle, as well as a facilities consultant, can speak to these kinds of things. So the center here designs, as they say, for as many people as possible, regardless of age, ability, or circumstance. They suggest think small changes that can benefit everyone. Number 19, have you invited colleagues and researchers who are differently abled to participate in space, program, or website assessment and design? Have you asked those with diverse abilities to evaluate what you have or do not already have in place? A collaborative and multidimensional approach brings many perspectives and benefits all users. An ongoing assessment makes sense. Remember, as one self-identified, differently abled library researcher who was also a library professional said, even our glorified new technologies may either enhance or impede one's ability to access information. There is no substitute for seeing barriers through the eyes of those who face different forms of challenges, not only in wheelchairs. Just do this. Real people with real experiences mean real solutions. Visit the Do It Center at the University of Washington for more inspiration. Do It equals disabilities, opportunities, internetworking, and technology. And they're a wealth of information. Number 20. Are respect, inclusion, cooperation, and compassion hallmarks of your archives? Is everyone who works or volunteers in your archives knowledgeable about and sensitive to accessibility issues? Is accessibility a hidden issue, or is it right out there, acknowledged and part of all training and professional development? Have workplace policies been modified to accommodate people who are differently abled? Are you aware of ADA regulations governing reasonable accommodations in your workplace? Some examples are flexible hours, working from home, longer and more frequent breaks, and work sharing. Are colleagues readily available when needed by other staff or patrons? Do you have a sign or a page on your website offering assistance to patrons who are differently abled? Do all colleagues know what assistive technology is available and how to use it if you're lucky enough to have a lot of those tools? Do colleagues look at all researchers in the eye and offer assistance from the point of view of that researcher? Are you aware of the legal or legislative requirements that govern accessibility in public places? And have you incorporated accessibility sustainability in your policies, budget planning, and review processes? Basic human kindness trumps excessive and expensive technologies, or even state-of-the-art facilities. Creating a welcoming environment is the goal, with someone ready to offer and assist, if it is the wish of your colleague or a patron, with reading, taking notes, computer or web tips, physical handling of an item, or any other reasonable request. Access, security, safety, assistance, and respect should be equally available to all colleagues and patrons. Finally, in the context of your own institution, what's been left out? If any of the things on the list can't be fixed perfectly because of money and architecture, and we all face these things, what workarounds can you consider and implement? Please visit the working group's website for more useful resources and access to all the resources we've created.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, you'll have time for questions afterward, but I'd like to go to the breakout sessions. So, Deborah Kimmick, who will share techniques for making conference presentations available, will be at the left back. Michelle Pacifico, who will give practical advice on physical accessibility, supporting what we've said, will be in the right back. And Lisa Snyder, who will do tips for web and document accessibility, will be right up here in the right front. And we'll then come together about 1 o'clock for a brief wrap-up and some questions from you. Okay? So, presentations in the left back, physical accessibility in the right back, web accessibility in the right front. Please do join your groups now and then come back again after. Thank you. At the end, no matter what group you join, I hope to have a very quick summary of what they say. But remember, all of the handouts and the discussion will be also available on the website after this. So I know that it's hard to, what do you want, the whole different thing. So it's really important to know that you can all have access to everything. We couldn't fit everything in 1 hour and 15 minutes. Can we rejoin the groups? Can the groups all rejoin? We'll use this next 5 minutes as a chance for you to share some things, insights with each other, and to ask questions that you'd like everyone to hear together from any of the breakout session leaders or any of the members of our committee. Thank you all. Okay, everyone. We just have a few minutes for some questions and some comments, and then we're going to wrap up with an announcement or two. You all had a chance to attend the breakout sessions of interest to you. You've all had now the umbrella list, and you've all chosen to come to this accessibility forum, which is really impressive. It means that you're taking these issues to heart. So does anyone have any comments they'd like to share, either about the breakout session they were in or in general? We would welcome that. I'll repeat them because it's being recorded. And I know it's always hard to start, so I wondered if someone was brave enough to pose a first question or to share a comment. Yes. Okay. The comment is that SAA's new use of screens and adding more amplification, particularly in our plenary sessions, means that colleagues who have said that they are hearing impaired find that they can actually see and hear the speakers that are part of the SAA session, and it enriches the experience of coming to this meeting. So that was a really positive comment and a good thing in terms of what SAA is doing in terms of accessibility. Does that summarize? Okay. Someone else. I'm going to ask Michelle, what's the most important thing you learned at Elisa's thing?
The tagging is really, really important, and never make links that say click here.
Okay. So in terms of web accessibility, the most important thing that a colleague learned was that tagging is critical, and never make links that say click here, because if someone is using a screen reader, they get nowhere and it's a dead end. Okay. Somebody who was in Deborah's session, what was the most important thing you learned from Deborah's session on meeting presentations? Somebody. Yes, sir.
I really liked her aware of the audience.
This was a very good comment based on Deborah's session about making meeting presentations more accessible. There is an assumption that people can actually raise their hand, and that's not always correct. So that we need to be mindful by looking at the audience and looking for puzzled expression or some other means of communicating to us that they'd like to ask a question or add a comment. So it includes about being tuned into who you are speaking to and who is part of your group. Does that summarize it?
I'm good.
Okay.
Sorry, I just want to.
Deborah would like to.
1 second. Can everyone hear me?
No, you have to come to the mic, Deborah. Deborah's going to add something.
I'm not sure this is required meant to be recorded, but I just wanted to let everyone know that this man who just asked this question, I just met today in person, and he's actually Stephen Thompson, who is part of our accessibility working group, but we just met, and I wanted to introduce him to the group.
All right.
Okay. And with someone in Michelle's breakout session about more information about physical accessibility, be willing to share the most important thing they learned. And I'm looking right at Karen. And then I'm going to follow with the lady behind Karen. So we're going to have two. Okay. Okay, Karen said a couple of things that were important. First is that she is glad to know, although it's a challenge for everyone, that other administrators and people are in the same boat that she is in trying to make her space physically accessible, and that she is grateful for the resources that are available on the Accessibility Working Group's webpage and other kinds of things that have been put together, and Michelle's facilities manual as well, so that there's a place to go so you can have a common dialogue, and there might be a place where similar kinds of issues are collectively discussed and there might be an answer for those particular kinds of questions. In addition, she observes that the only real way for her to understand what's going on in terms of the physical accessibility is to put oneself in the place of someone who is facing barriers that we don't normally see if we don't face those challenges. And by doing that, it can help see better what needs to be done and what needs to be taken care of, and she'd find the resources to do that. Does that make sense? Okay, and you behind Karen.
I would just add that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this was another important observation, that look at your physical space honestly and critically. Address what you can in terms of your priorities and resources, and then be honest and communicate what is not possible or where there are challenges or where there are challenges that will remain, so that anyone coming in can come to the best place possible and won't be directed to some place that will be a challenge for more of a challenge for them. So do what you can, and then be honest about what you can't do because you don't have those resources. Is that?
Yes.
Would someone like one final comment? Yes, sir. Okay, this was a very important comment from someone who understands what it really means to be limited by this. A very important thing for everyone to remember, and it should be part of all conference presentations or anything else, is to speak directly into the microphone in a way that doesn't magnify the sound but makes it clear so that people who need the microphone to hear can hear what you're saying clearly and without static. Okay? All right. We're going to wrap up. We will add that. That's very good. Thank you very much. We will make that clarification, as Deborah said. Okay. Michelle has some information that she received from council that she would like to share about some council initiatives. And I think I'd like to ask Michelle to do that, and then I'll come back for the final wrap up. Okay?
I will make this real quick, and my little group already knows these things. The major initiatives of SAA for the next few years are going to be advocacy and diversity. And our group hopes to get involved in that because, obviously, accessibility is both a diversity and an advocacy issue. The second thing that SAA is going to be doing is initiating a task force to look at annual meetings. And again, we hope, and if any of you out there are interested and want to join with us, we hope to have some input into that task force and take what we've learned from you, take what we've learned from Deborah and our other resources, and have some impact on accessibility and annual meetings. So let us know. Thanks.
Okay. Okay, now the last thing. So I would like to encourage you all to speak to working group members, to stop by our table in the registration area, to come to our table tonight during the vendor session, and communicate with us by our website or by any person's name. You have all this on the handout. If you have concerns, if you have issues, if you have things to share, if you'd like to participate in the group discussions, all of that is really important. This has become an issue because from the grassroots, we have said to SAA and to our colleagues that we really need to revisit this and think this. And this is only going to happen if you're willing to take a stand and to speak up. So please do that, and please be in touch with us. Is that?
Yeah.
And Oh, Lisa's session is next. 1:30, she's running out of here now. More about web tips. So if you loved your session or you weren't, didn't get a chance to do it, go to it. It is number
109
in room?
Next door.
IJ. Read it in your program. Look at it on your web app. Thank you all very much. We really appreciate you coming during your lunch hour. Bye-bye now. Yeah.